settle by 11 or we'll strike.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. The United Auto Workers and General Motors have the pedal to the metal trying to agree on a new contract within the next few hours. 11 a.m. Eastern Time is the deadline set by the UAW. One of the last sticking points is how much money GM must pay into a trust fund for retiree health care. That fund will be managed by the union. Just a reminder that things are supposed to be all rosy now the Fed's cut interest rates. We'll see about that with new talk of fresh inflation worries. The Dow will be starting the day from a 1/3% rise on Friday. It was up 2.8% for the week. The Nasdaq wrapped up with a weekly gain of 2.7%. The S&P 500 rose 2.8% for the week. Oh yeah, that subprime thing. It hasn't gone away. Word today that Deutsche Bank could be the next big loser. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is watching that story in London. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Bob.
So what are you hearing in terms of how bad the damage might be?
Well, Reuters is reporting that the bank, one of the largest investment banks in the world, has suffered a $2.4 billion fall in profits because of the credit crunch. I should say the bank is refusing to comment on this story and confirm it.
Well, this wouldn't be the first German casualty of the subprime meltdown, and yet German banking has a reputation for being conservative, not taking on too much risk, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This is really ironic. I mean, these financial innovations that are at the heart of the crisis, things like the securitization of loans, were pioneered by American investment banks, and yet some U.S. investment banks, like Goldman Sachs and Lehman Brothers, have emerged virtually unscathed from the crisis, whereas we see German banks taking quite a hit. And this is doubly ironic given the fact that Germany is the one country that's been most critical of these innovations. One analyst put it to me like this. He said it's exactly the same in politics. Often the most puritanical, moralistic politicians who regularly denounce sin and vice are precisely the ones who turn out to be the most deeply immersed in it.
We've heard a lot of calls for a crackdown here in this country. You think we're going to be hearing louder calls for regulation in Europe?
We're hearing that already, but it may well be that in the present market conditions, regulation is not really required. Banks are already showing a marked reluctance to lend to hedge funds and private equity firms.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Thank you.
Okay, Bob.
Climate change is the main topic today at a meeting at the UN. President Bush takes up the same discussion later in the week, and critics say his timing may not be by accident. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
The UN meeting is aimed at shoring up support for a post-Kyoto international climate treaty, but it's a separate meeting to be hosted by President Bush that's getting most of the attention. Those talks will bring together leaders of the world's major economies, including China and Brazil. But the White House isn't releasing specific details, and that has some environmental groups crying foul.
This conference is developing to be more a talk fest than anything else.
Philip Clapp heads the National Environmental Trust. He says while the UN is seeking concrete reductions in greenhouse gases, the White House is still talking about voluntary cuts.
There are no proposals on the table, either from the administration or from other parties, for any mandatory or binding emissions reduction agreements of any kind.
Clapp fears that could further isolate the U.S., jeopardizing its role in the upcoming climate treaty talks in Bali, which are scheduled to begin in December. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by The Economist magazine, which tells not only what's happening around the world each week, but why. The Economist, at newsstands, in bookstores, and at economist.com. By the American Public Transportation Association, representing America's public transportation industry, delivering 10 billion riders annually, and working for an energy-independent America, publictransportation.org. And by Siemens, from generators that power cities to light bulbs for homes, from factory automation to medical diagnostics, Siemens 70,000 U.S. employees providing solutions for America.
Working Mother magazine releases its annual list of 100 best companies tomorrow. The list recognizes employers with parent-friendly policies like paid family leave and flex time. There are dozens of lists like these, best companies for diversity, best law firms for the left-handed. Just kidding about that one. But how much can you really judge about an employer based on some award in a magazine? Marketplace's Amy Scott looks into that question.
Companies spend a lot of money and time trying to get on lists like Working Mothers. It's great PR and helps them attract talent. HR departments devote hours to collecting data and filling out questionnaires. Sometimes they even hire consultants like Debbie Phillips with WFD Consulting. She says she often hears from companies who want help getting on a list, or maybe they've fallen off and want back on.
We don't guarantee at all that they will get back on a list, but there are areas where we can certainly help them.
Like advising them on childcare or flex time programs. But how good are these companies for working women really? Of the 100 best last year, 8 of them didn't offer any fully paid maternity leave. 2 award winners didn't offer paid leave at all. Martha Burke is with the National Council of Women's Organizations.
What we did find is a lot of bragging about 12 weeks of unpaid leave, but what they don't tell you is the federal government requires that of any company that employs 50 or more people.
Then there's the cozy relationship between award winners and the magazine. By Working Mother's own calculation, 65% of the winners buy advertising. Many of them sponsor the annual awards dinner. Carol Evans is CEO of Working Mother Media. She insists there's no quid pro quo.
Not that we won't ask you to advertise, because it's a real opportunity for companies to get their commercial message out right in the same environment where they're also getting a very strong editorial message.
Evans believes the competition to get on Working Mother lists has helped move the needle on women's issues. When the list started 22 years ago, employers scored points for offering on-site dry cleaning. Common perks offered today, like paternity leave, were almost unheard of back then. But critics say job seekers should view these lists skeptically. A few years ago, Morgan Stanley paid $54 million to settle a sex discrimination lawsuit. As part of its defense, the company cited its place on Working Mother's 100 Best. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. We've got more of the latest financial news at marketplace.org. Appreciate you making us a part of your morning.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.